Speaking from the CWI has got to get the facts right. She wants to talk about the Social Pilot Paper. And our party has not ever supported the Mensheviks in Russia. If you want to quote chapter and verse, then you can come back and tell us where we did support the Mensheviks in Russia. And if you can't do that, then you should come better prepared to debates. Now, let me deal with actually the points that are made, because as I say, I'm not dealing with what's historically wrong. What's historically wrong is her problem, not ours. She says, look, what is the Socialist Party of Great Britain doing? And the second Leninist for the CWO says the same thing. You've been here for 80 years, you know, going out setting your socialist standard, working in your trade union, so you haven't got socialism. It's not good enough. You know, it's really unacceptable to our friends from the CWO that we haven't got further. Well, what is the Communist Workers' Organisation? What are they doing? I mean, as a member, I know what my comrades in the Socialist Party are doing. You know, I know that I've discovered this evening, this is a bourgeois practice. We go around, we try to put ideas to other people. This is a basic form of human communication. You can only talk, you can only write, you can only persuade. You can't actually force people, you can't shoot people into socialism, you can't lead them or trick them into socialism. If you think you can, then try and do it. After all, we've been going 80 years, you've been going for 1/8 of that time. You haven't led them, you haven't tricked them, you haven't caught on to the process or jumped onto a revolutionary situation or caught onto an experience just as it was happening. Nothing's happened. So all the Communist Workers' Organisation are doing is in fact the same as the Socialist Party of Great Britain. They publish a journal. The only difference is pit workers can't understand their journal. At least they can read our one. I can't understand our one, and I meant, according to them, be one of the minority who can understand socialism. Secondly, they talk about Parliament. It's nonsense. If you notice, Parliament has only been mentioned by that side during this debate. The Socialist Party hasn't mentioned it. We're not interested in talking about Parliament. In different parts of the world, actually, again, if the Communist Workers' Organisation would read the pamphlets produced by the Socialist Party of Great Britain, he says they remind him of the 1950s. He's reading ones written in the 1950s. But, in fact... 1962. Well, that wasn't your, you know, that wasn't your childhood in the 50s then. That must have been your political maturity in the early 60s. But the thing was this. You read a pamphlet at the back on the Declaration of Principles explained. In there you'll see it says the Socialist Party is in favour of the use of Parliament where necessary, Soviets where necessary, any revolutionary bodies at work. Well, you see, we are not parliamentary fetishists. We're not interested in this. The trouble with the CWO and these other odd people who come out of some tradition of the Italian left in the past is that they are anti-parliamentary fetishists. They've got a hang-up about Parliament. The reason they've got a hang-up about Parliament is because of the motion tonight, which the CWO speakers didn't address themselves to. They don't think workers can ever understand socialism under capitalist conditions. And therefore, it's understandable that they oppose ballots. It's understandable that they oppose workers having to show that they are in a majority in favour of something, because they don't think they will be. And therefore, they think that by a process of some kind of leadership, workers are going to be led into something which they haven't understood. This is a position. And this is spelt out, in fact, by the contributor over there when she talks about collapse. This reminds me of when I was indulging in my hobby of debating with the International Communist Current a few years ago before they corrected their deviation and stopped debating with us. And they corrected their deviation after 3 debates every time they went away and had to reread their own literature, and then they corrected their deviation and decided they better not do it anymore. And the Communist Workers' Organisation might do the same thing after they've had a few more debates with us. But the thing is this. You see, I remember I was once debating against the ICC. They debated against us. You know, they wanted to do it every week, every night of the week. You know, they were so interested in the class struggle. Every time you mentioned a night for a debate, they were free. And the thing was this, that when you... I remember talking once, and somebody got up in the middle of the hall at a debate with the International Communist Current, and she said, "Capitalism is once again in a permanent crisis." And of course, she at the back, she talks about collapse, and he says it as well. Capitalism is collapsing around us. Well, it's very nice. It's very nice if you do nothing, if socialism is a hobby for you, if you don't think the working class are ever going to emancipate ourselves. It's very nice. You think, oh, well, capitalism will collapse. The Communist Party, I remember the Socialist Party of Great Britain has been around a long time. He says it's got something to do with the Second International. Our party was going long enough to have actually resigned from the Second International. The CWR and the ICC talk about it. We actually walked out of it. And the thing is this, that, you know, when I talk about capitalism collapsing, the Socialist Party of Great Britain had a debate fixed with the other another group of Leninists, the Communist Party of Great Britain, in the 1920s. And the Communist Party of Great Britain wrote back a couple of weeks before the debate, and they said, we can't engage in this debate in 2 weeks' time. Capitalism will have collapsed by then. You know, this letter is actually in our archives at our head office. Now, this talk about capitalism collapsing, don't be silly. You know, it's silly. You're indulging. What is happening is it's a political fantasy again. What you're doing is you're saying, look, there are all these workers out there, as this Leninist here says. Look, I keep talking to them. They won't agree with me. They won't agree even on the day of the revolution. They're going to have the pregnancy after the birth. And then what happens is that he says, look, I can't get through to them. So, of course, you invent this idea, the collapse theory. Everyone's put it. In the 1880s, even Bloody Randolph Churchill was putting it. They all used to think capitalism's collapsing. Capitalism isn't collapsing around our ears, don't you think? You read the Financial Times, you'll see it's not collapsing. And there's a final point I would like to make, and this applies again particularly to the second speaker, because he spoke after me, not before, and therefore he should have dealt with what I said. The questioner there, she asks a question. Look, we don't talk about how a socialist, moneyless society will be run. The Communist Workers' Organization does. I wasn't making up those quotations that I read out.
Correct, I didn't say how it would be run. How
would you get there? Well, I'm interested in, you see, what the Socialist Party is saying is that the two are inseparable. How you get there and how something is run are not to be separated. You don't get there by leadership, and then when you've got there, you have cooperation. You either get there by cooperation, or you don't have a cooperative society. Now, I have got this here. Anyone who wants it can read it. It is a joke. The period of transition from revolutionary perspectives. You'll have to try hard to understand what it's all about. But if you read it, it's full of absolute nonsense. It's an insult to the working class. There's going to be money, there are going to be a rationing system, labour vouchers, there's going to be a proletarian state, a militia, prisons. No, no, no.
It doesn't say anything about money in there.
No, look.
Labour time vouchers are not money, and Marx specifically says so in the Critique of the Gold.
I'll take his word for it.
Just a minute. Quiet. He can speak afterwards. I'm not going to have a shouting match. All right? Well, make one point of information then.
Conrad Buick has given the Conrad this text because Conrad Buick received it in 1974. There was no such organisation as the CWO in 1974. I can also tell you that it's not the CWO text because I wrote it. And the CWO has specifically drawn that text. So if you read Revolutionary Perspectives, number 19, you will see that it says so. Right? And so you've been wasting a lot of wind, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
You weren't going to tell me it. You've got to tell
the rest of the working class about it now, not just me. They haven't all read number 19. Because the thing is, you know, look, the fact of the matter is, what he says even here is wrong. It says at the top of it, the article was originally written at the end of 1974. We find out it's by him. This explains a lot. Then Revolutionary Perspectives is intended as a discussion journal. They joined together with something called Workers' Voice, and then they incorporated this into their programme. Now, if the CWO says that they've withdrawn all of this, that they don't stand for a proletarian state, they don't stand for labour vouchers, they don't stand for the existence of money, they don't stand for a proletarian militia and courts and prisons and all the rest of it, I haven't wasted my time. The CWO has, because they issue this stuff. Get up and tell us what socialism is actually going to be about as far as you're concerned. If you stand for a transition period, what's it going to be like? Capitalist or socialist? This is what workers want to know. It's no good issuing texts which you retract a few weeks later. If you're going to be a revolutionary organisation, you've got to be serious. No good sitting in the small room at the top of the Prince Albert changing your text and your revolutionary manifesto every 2 weeks. You've got to be clear. Socialist Party's been going for 80 years. We've had a declaration of principles. We've had an objective. We put it before the working class. We put it before it in a sincere and clear manner. You can't just stand up in front of workers and say, we put this out in 1974, we issue it for public release, and then when we have it quoted back at us, we want to retract it.
Right. There are five people already. Well, do you want to respond? Do you want to respond to that? Right.
Firstly, the gentleman over here said that the Socialist Party has been putting forward the same principles for 80 years and that they are a very sincere party. Until this meeting, I believed that. Right? But having heard the distortions and lies that have come from the other side of the table about our position, I now know that, in fact, you have been schooled in Stalinism, having debated with it in the past.
Grow up.
Well, actually, I forgot the point I was going to make. The question about, we've tracked nothing about the need for a transitional, a period of transition, right? That is something that is central to the Marxist tradition, and that is something that we support. The precise details of it, though, we are, obviously, there are many open questions over the that question, but we believe that the ultimate aim is the same as the aim as you wish to establish. We've said that at the beginning of the debate. A classless, moneyless, stateless society. The fact that there is a period of transition between it is something that is at the crux, one of the differences between us. The fact that you say that the conditions for communism already exist within capitalist society somehow, and that mysteriously this can then come about rather quickly after an election, is something that we have not been able to agree with. But we say that, as Marx said, the muck of the old society is carried over into the new, and there has to be a period of ridding that. There has to be a period of suppressing the bourgeois forces which wish to suppress the proletariat. Right? And that is the reason why there exists a proletarian state. Right? This, I think, is a matter which is not the serious debate between us. The serious debate is about how we're going to get to communism. And it seems to me that you don't have any explanation. And you've said that you don't fetishise parliament, yet we don't see any other mechanism in your text for how we're going to get to communism. You seem to think, put your faith in bourgeois institutions. And this is the question that we've been addressing to you. And we've had no answers on this question. Instead, all we've had are a lot of very experienced debating points, but not real answers to the questions that we're putting.
Right, there are six hands that have already been raised. We're not going to be able to go through all of them unless we run to about midnight at this rate. But you were first.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask a question that you've been asked before. I wanted to ask this big leader whether in the current strike, mining strike, they are on the side of the miners' violence against the police, the police's violence against the miners, both or neither. I mean, there are only four alternatives, and one of those is just theoretical.
Right.
Can we have an answer, please?
Well, yes. Well, the Socialist Party, as I said before, is always on the side of the workers every time that they get into a conflict with their employers. Now, you asked the question as to whose side we're on when the police use violence against the miners. I mean, it's a silly question to ask us. Of course we're on the side of the workers. As to what is the best way for the workers to respond to that, I mean, that's up to them to decide for themselves. I mean, We're not up here as leaders out to tell workers how they should organise their, their strikes. I've been following the miners' strike, since the beginning. And we in the Socialist Party have had doubts about whether they can succeed given the nature of capitalism. But if you want a point of view, I would have thought that the tactics adopted by the National Union of Mine Workers have been fairly effective, have been what the situation has wanted. But that's only an opinion, because, as I say, the Socialist Party doesn't exist to be a leader. It doesn't exist to tell workers what to do. It's not us that's going to run strikes. It's not us that's going to make the social revolution. It's
The people that are best qualified to decide how to run strikes are the workers involved in it, and the people best qualified to establish socialism are the workers once they become socialists. I mean, as I say, we're just not a vanguard. No, you know, it's as clear as that. We don't give a lead. We don't want to give a lead.
There's a chap here who had his hand up earlier. You don't want to give a contribution, right? Because one day you will.
I'm speaking on behalf of the Communist Workers' Organization. There are a number of points I wish to raise after the fairly lively introduction which has been going on. First of all, I'd like to raise a point concerning what one of the SPGB members at the front said a few minutes ago, i.e. that what procedural you're always propagating is an insult to the working class. Now, particularly in light of the last exchange, which has just taken place, and the most recent answer from the SPGB, it is very noticeable that throughout the whole of the evening, definitely throughout both of the contributions or introductions from the SPGB, there was no attempt whatsoever to relate their sort of airy-fairy and idealist talk about capitalism is bad, socialism is good, let's get socialism now. amidst all this, there was absolutely no attempt whatsoever to relate this to the real world and to explain how socialism is to be actually achieved and what are the first steps towards an increase in the presence of socialist understanding within the working class. As I say, we have been accused of throwing insults at the working class. Well, the SPGB have just been asked which side are they on when the police are battering hell out of a combative section of the working class in Britain. The question has been put to them, and they've tried to bluff their way out of it. Indeed, they were intent on not mentioning the issue of the class struggle in general, let alone the miners' strike all evening. But I think that the meeting might be interested in hearing about other meetings which the CWO has attended, SPGB meetings in various parts of Britain, where, for example, in Manchester we've intervened during last summer we intervened also twice in Manchester. And one of the questions we did put to them was, what is your position on the miners' strike? What are you doing? What is the way forward for the working class in the struggle? How can you generalise the struggle as a step towards increased opportunity for the intervention of communists and for the spreading of communist ideas? The answer we got was very clear and simple. It's first of all that, A, it's absolutely utopian to expect other sections of the working class, this was in May, to expect other sections of the working class to come out on strike with the miners. It's very utopian because it's not an issue for them, basically. And in any case, it's down to the workers themselves to decide whether they want to support it. That was the first part of the answer. Secondly, a prominent member of the SPGB then said, we must point out that strike action, as far as the SPGB is concerned in general, is futile because it is incapable of extending beyond a simple sort of
defensive posture,
a sort of wages issue, and there's no hope, given that, there's no hope of extending the struggle. And he also pointed out that the SPGB wished to make it very clear that the battles with the police, which had been taking place around that time, particularly at Orgreave and at various other places, although not as intense as they are recently, were anti-democratic incidents which should be condemned by socialists. It's as simple as that. And that's just one point. We would appreciate it, basically, if the SPGB had allowed this to be brought out in the meeting. I just thought it might be quite interesting information for other people in the room. Of course, when the dockers did come out for the first time this summer in solidarity with the miners, you would search thoroughly through the SPGB's press for a word about that, as you will always indeed search through the SPGB's press for a word about the international class struggle, other than things about which buildings were made in France and what sort of epoch they were built in and all the rest of it, what significance have surnames got. Now, we have been asked, what is the CWO doing in the class struggle? And we've been asked this 17 times this year between our poll tests with the SPGB. And what we are doing, basically what we have been doing since the advent of the miners' strike, is continually intervening in the struggle wherever possible, showing the miners, and indeed other workers, such as the dockers, when we have been able to intervene there, that this struggle is not a struggle only for the miners. It is a struggle for the whole of the working class, whatever industry, or whether unemployed, and it is not a national struggle, it is an international struggle, a struggle with interest for the whole of the working class, both in Britain and internationally. We have produced leaflets pointing out the way towards the beginning of an intervention to make socialism, to make the possibility of socialism feasible, basically, and the first stages which have to be gone through, one confronted with an enormous struggle like the miners in Britain, and elsewhere in fact, are going through at the moment, is to call clearly for the generalisation of the struggle outside of trade union control, as this is a capitalist threat on the struggle. I hope that answers part of the question. Just one final point, because I don't want to ramble on unnecessarily, because I'm hardly thankful from the last few exchanges we've heard from the SPGB that they're worth very much. But there's one point about which cannot go without a condemnation, I think. About half an hour ago, I think it was, one of their speakers stated quite clearly that it was a nonsense to talk of international revolution. Almost in the same breath as he had just said, it is ridiculous to accuse us of supporting the idea of socialism in one country. Now, how do they explain that? Basically, the whole essence of a Marxist position on the world, basically, is that the struggle of the working class and its emancipation is an international affair. Anything which detracts from that is the purest, the most puerile capitalist counter-revolution. And that's all that these people have been able to put forward tonight. It is just, it was actually, just as a final point, evident right from the beginning of the meeting that the SPGB's nationalism, for those of us who were able to notice it, one of the first remarks which they made was that when talking about socialist consciousness, we must make it absolutely clear, they said, that what we're talking about is an English majority socialist understanding.
Yeah, sorry, I must intervene at this point, as they say. No, it's a complete misunderstanding. I've learned from speaking on the party platform for, you know, for 20 years that irony never works, but it wasn't even irony. What I said was this: we don't stand for an international revolution because we stand for a world revolution, and we stand for a world revolution because the word international, I'll spell it out, INTER-national, it implies that there's going to be national revolutions going on. We stand for a world revolution precisely because we reject the whole idea of cooperation between nations. We reject the whole idea of nations. We're citizens of the world, and we want to see a world revolution. It may be that you're hearing things. I mean, nobody said that we stand for an English majority, presumably, and maybe I speak quickly like now, but what's it? A conscious majority working class. I mean, that's the only explanation I can think of, because, I mean, the Socialist Party is the most a-national, non-national organisation that I know. I mean, people just laugh at the whole idea of, you know, of nationalism and patriotism, and I repeat it again. We don't talk about an international revolution because we find it's too nationalist a word. That's why we talk about the need for a world revolution. The other points I can deal with, I'm going to be summing up, I think.
If you look at the title for tonight's debate, it says, "Can the majority of workers develop socialist consciousness under capitalism?" And I want to point out firstly that the CWO, there's been no cover-up job, given a straight answer to that, no, quite explicit. Now, arising out of that, there are several points I'd like to quickly refer to. Firstly, I've had a quick glance at their literature. It'd be interesting to wonder when, if ever, they're going to produce a leaflet for general distribution to the working class, the heading of which is, "We understand, you can't follow us." would be the honest thing to do. Because it's a dishonest organisation, you find a lot of material here, and nowhere in there does it say that honest fact which they've stated tonight. We understand, the rest of you can't. Second point that arises out of their position is that they say, oh, workers can't understand something. It's bourgeois intellectuals. So the second point, the question that arises is, they, individually, must be bourgeois intellectuals. Now, I don't know about the class position of the two people in front of us, whether they are indeed part of that minority of bourgeoisie, in other words, people who control capital, possess and accumulate capital. If they do, they're very fortunate indeed, because unlike the rest of us, they won't be getting up on Monday in order to go to work or to sign on the dole. That's another question which arises. Now, thirdly, there was the question of elections, and I found this very interesting, because somebody said, it wasn't in fact somebody from the platform, somebody at the back, I think, raised the, oh no, maybe wrong, maybe from the platform, the question of the vote, saying that the capitalist class granted the vote to workers in the 19th century as a guarantee of their power. They granted the vote because they thought, well, the vote can't overthrow us. Which is a very widespread idea, that the vote from the moment it was granted was a tool for the furthering of capitalist interests. Now, of course, it has been that to a large extent. That vote has been used by workers to perpetuate capitalism. We all know that, it's quite obvious. But I made this point, it's a subtle distinction. The capitalist class did not grant the vote to workers as a guarantee of capitalist power. In fact, they were quite worried about the granting of the vote. Now, if you go and look at Hansard parliamentary records for the 1860s, you'll find numerous references to capitalists, to politicians, expressing a terrible fear, quite sincerely, that if they gave the vote to the workers would turn around and use it against them. That was a real fear. So why did it happen? Why did they grant this vote? They did so, not as a guarantee of their power, but because they feared that if they withheld the vote from workers, it would be even worse. They were caught in a catch-22 situation, and they were afraid of either possibility. Why did it tilt the balance? Because the workers themselves put pressure on throughout the 19th century in many cases. The capitalists were afraid of revolt, so they gave the vote. It doesn't mean you can't use that vote once you've got a conscious revolutionary majority. You can use anything you want as long as you've got that conscious majority. Now, finally, and perhaps most importantly, I'd like to raise the question of capitalism itself. Understandably, we've had a debate tonight about strategy, if you like, and therefore we haven't dwelt too much on capitalism itself. But I'd like to, for a moment, if I may. Very important, I think. Because you see, what the CWO have said is that workers can't understand socialism the way things are, so what you've got to do is modify capitalism, introduce a different form of capitalism, effectively. They didn't say that, that's what it amounts to. They said introduce something called a proletarian state. It won't be perfect, it won't be communism, but it will be, and I'm going to quote the speaker at the front now, he said, you've got to have the material process through which this can be achieved. In other words, he's saying that you've got to actually somehow create different material conditions from these before you can get your revolutionary majority. This is obviously the CWO position. You cannot get a majority of socialists under these conditions. So therefore you create, as a revolutionary vanguard, you create some other conditions and then you can get your majority. Now I'd ask you this question. Let's look at the conditions we've got at the moment. And I'll give a couple of examples. They won't like me doing this because I've got no stocks and shares. I'm a worker. And yet, I disprove their argument because I have understood capitalism very well, I believe. But just look at the examples you can give. In Britain today, you've got the biggest brick surplus since the Second World War. You've got 500,000 unemployed building workers of one kind or another. And yet, you've got homeless figures issued by the government itself to the working class for general consumption, which show that there are thousands and thousands of genuinely homeless families. Now, that's just one of many, many contradictions. More obvious one still, you've got a massive desire for peace. Even the capitalists themselves don't want to see the entire planet blown to pieces. You've got a desire for peace throughout the working class. And yet, you've got this country alone spending £1 million every single hour, £2 million every single hour on weapons. Now, you've got these contradictions, which as socialists we seek to publicise in the socialist standard for workers' consumption. And we've been told, workers don't, I'm going to get this. I'm a worker and I've got it. And these contradictions, and this is where the word insult comes in, it's an insult for the arrogant people up there to sit there smugly and tell us that we as workers are so thick, and they are calling us thick, we're so thick that we're going to look at these contradictions and say, oh, that's a shame, isn't it? That's all. We're not. Workers don't say this. Workers look at these contradictions and they realise that the material process has started right here and now. It started already. The conditions under capitalism which we are suffering are producing not just discontent of an ineffective kind, they're actually producing discontent of a very active kind. So I therefore say that what the CWO has done is actually given us, as I think somebody said earlier, a very heavy and depressing dose of defeatism. You can't do this, you can't do that. And these terrible contradictions we're looking at, no, they're not actually going to have any effect in changing workers' minds. We need them up there to try and teach people a thing or two by transforming the conditions first themselves. Now, I'm going to put a brief question, perhaps it will be dealt with in the winding up period. I'll be quite blunt. I'm not going to put the question to the CWO, and I'll tell you why not. I don't personally want to hear anything further from a self-styled vanguard, which is claiming that it's going to set itself up to lead me, so I don't give a toss what they've got to say, because I can lead myself. So I'm not going to ask them a question. I don't want to hear from them what I can't do, what we cannot achieve, and all of this crap. I'm actually going to ask the socialist speaker in his winding up to tell us very clearly what can be achieved in the coming years, not what can't be achieved.
Right. Yes. I'll speak for the CWO. Again, a few distortions in that last contribution, I hope will be answered in the winding up speech. My comrades at the front. When the comrade over there, Mr. Coleman, made his intervention, he accused the CWO of being unclear about typists. Now, this is very important. Because to be unclear about typists,
you are worried.
But the SPGB are unclear about the state and the nature of the police. I quote. Because occasionally we're told we don't know the sources. September 84, Socialist Standard, page 164. On the one hand, it says, the state is not neutral. The state is the government, the law, the judges, the police commanders. I repeat that, the police commanders. On the other hand, they say, however, the police are ordinary workers, paid to do an unpleasant job. Now, I would suggest you ask a miner, I'm picking an animal breed, whether the guy who just beat him up is actually a comrade in arms. Because comrades, I feel, if you went to the Yorkshire pits at the moment and said, police are ordinary workers, I suggest you get the fastest bus out there to find one. In the same article, of course, though, they contradict themselves. They say, in a class war, comrades, no worker, again, I stress it, no worker, and no political party can be neutral. Now, I suggest to you that if the police are workers, whose side in a class war are the police on? Now, if we're unclear about typists, okay, maybe unclear about typists. But really, I don't feel that typists pose a threat as much to revolution as the police do. And I would suggest, comrade, that my question for you is whose side in a class war are the police on? Now, we've not had a chance really to discuss the SPGB's arguments regarding war. Most of us who had to read their stuff for this meeting have found their articles, for example, on Falklands War to be completely abstentionist. And in fact, it's quite funny, you know, because we've been accused of that all night, of being elitist, vanguardist, we think the workers are fit. And I quote comrades, Socialist Standard number 10, the Falklands. The last paragraph. Now, you can find a more condescending, elitist paragraph ever written in the workers' movement, I suggest you have to see. Because unfortunately, as a revolutionary, I read a lot of shit most weeks. I have to buy the leftist press to keep up with what the leftists say. And occasionally I buy a Socialist Standard. And normally, the Socialist Standard is quite informative. But I quote you. So British and Argentinian servicemen went across the ocean to do battle with each other in their master's cause. Right. It was another doleful example of ignorant workers being easily duped by the empty jingoism and desperate politicians. Now, comrades, if you go up to work and say, well, actually, you know, you are ignorant because you support the Falklands War, I suggest, you know, you get a fast bus away. Because, comrades, you may call us vanguardists, you may call us elitists, but nowhere in any of workers' voices or any of our piece will we call the working class ignorant. Now, I would suggest also...
That's because you're patronising.
One at a time, please. One at a time.
Just,
one at a time.
Side with you on
this.
One
at a time.
Again, as I said, I was under the impression, as members of the, this was a public debate, and that, you know, been a bit on a debating level. But obviously, the SPGB are more used to arguing from Hyde Park Corner on Sundays, but of course they don't often get a chance to argue in a rational debating method. They normally, as we've seen them in practice in Hyde Park, quite good at heckling and shouting down interventions from the floor there. One thing, I mean, the danger, which obviously the SPGs, lack of clarity on nature of police force poses now, well, it's mainly for the future, of course, when revolution comes, they'll be trying to convince the majority of the police force, socialism, okay, that's, you know, it's a good thing. But I think, you know, the thing about war is more important, because the comrade said basically the Cavaliers were not in crisis. Well, again, I think anybody who, I mean, we all read the Financial Times, come over, we also read other papers, and I think if you actually believe the Financial Times doesn't believe the world economy is in crisis, then I'm afraid your copy must be in Chinese. Because, comrades, this face, the unemployment of the world economy as it is now, anybody who denies the existence of an economic crisis worldwide, and we don't have to look at what's happening in Ethiopia at the moment, which is what's happening in Brazil, Chile, and South America, to realise there is a world crisis. But finally, the SPGB, when it comes to war, they just hold up their hands and give up. Because, this face, because they say, plain fact of the matter is that if workers support capitalism in peacetime, they can be persuaded to support it in wartime. And as we've seen not only in the Falklands War, in World War I and World War II, when workers go forward to support war in a war situation, the SPG give up. And I think that's probably the best thing they can do.
Right, I'm going to respond to that.
First of all, you know, in addition to a political problem, CWR is a hearing problem, you know. I didn't say the capitalist class wasn't in a crisis. I said the capitalist class wasn't collapsing. And there's a major difference, because capitalist crises don't need to collapse. Capitalist crises are followed by capitalist booms. And it doesn't matter. Whether that's right or wrong, Marx said it, so you ought to agree with it. Now, let me deal with that. It doesn't matter.
20th century, you've been going for 80 years.
One at a time, please.
Just got
up. The only time I sit down after CWO and the ICC feel that this need to intervene. But, I mean, the CWO have got a problem with typists because they have to keep retyping their manifesto for the transitional period, you see. They probably, you know, will have a typist strike at the CWO head office. But on the question about the police, Comrade Chairman, he says, go and ask a picket, this is the glory, what I would call the interpretation of the political orgasm, you know, go and ask a picket on a minor on a picket line. Oh, well, ask a miner on a picket line, he's bound to tell you what the police are. He's going to have a clear Marxist analysis. After all, he voted Labour in the last election. So, you know, just go and have a chat with him, and he'll tell you that the police aren't workers. Well, go and ask a miner on the picket line, what is that policeman? He'll say, oh, him, he's my cousin. He won't say whether he's a worker or not. These are people who have gone to the same schools, they live in the same slums. You know, there are two classes in society. There are workers, there are capitalists, there are parasites, and there are people who were robbed of surplus value. And if you think the members of the police force are members of the capitalist class, not members of the working class, then you know you're a fool. You go and tell the police about that. And you say, but also, it's an interesting thing, you know, because in addition to saying that, what he misses a fundamental thing. Marx makes a distinction, you know, between a class in itself and a class for itself. I remember people being in a class and people understanding that they're in a class. Police are members of the working class. That doesn't mean that they understand the members of the working class. That's why you can be a member of the working class and act against the working class. That's what the CWO is doing, as a matter of fact. They're doing it far less effectively than the police, but they're doing it. And also, when you talk about ignorant soldiers, well, you know, why is he opposing us referring to soldiers being ignorant? First of all, according to the CWO, the soldiers who went to Argentina were members of the army, so they weren't members of the working class. So this is an insult to the working class. If they're members of the army, according to them, they're part of the state machine, like the police and like all of these other non-members of the working class. But the other point about it is, we've got to be quite clear to workers. If workers don't understand their class position, the Socialist Party, as our
comrade at the back said. We come out quite clearly to our fellow workers and we say, you don't understand what socialism is. You are ignorant of the solution to the problem. What the CWO does is the opposite. They come out in the working class and say, we're with you boys, we're on your side, we're on the picket line, and then they all go back into their rooms and they say, you're a lot of bloody idiots. That's the position. That's the difference.
Just a minute. Sorry, there's one person here who's had a hand up for quite some time. I'm going to take that question and then I'm going to ask the two main speakers from each organisation to sum up and they will take in the comments that you've raised, all right? Now.
Yes, I'm speaking on behalf of the International Conference Current. The point I wanted to make was about the points that have been made about the mine strike and whether the SQGC defends mines and the use of class violence against the terror of the border state and the violence that the police is using against the workers or not. I'm not going to go into that point in detail. For the SPGB, they say, well, yes, of course, the question of the working class, yes, of course, we support the mine, we support the working class, etc. They also say that the police are part of the working class. So we assume that the SPGB supports the miners in their struggle against the police, but also supports the police beating the miners over the head. This is revolutionaries have to take up a clear position on that question. We do defend revolutionary violence of the working class because that is the only way the working class can defend itself. And we ask you to take a clear position. We're not asking you to give a diktat to the working class, to give a command to the working class. We're asking you to take a position on that. And the point we want to make is that if revolutionaries are not prepared to hold clear positions and to put them forward to the class, to defend them, to hold them away from the class in our process of developing class consciousness is taking place at the moment, then you disband because you're no use to the class at all. The class struggle creates the revolution minorities for a specific purpose, and that is to be a political vanguard, not to take control of the struggle, not to lead the struggle, but to give a political direction to the struggle, to discuss with the working class, to put forward our positions to the working class, to repress it, to lead this by discussions with workers. To actually intervene in the organs that in a later period will be created by the working class, in the strike committees, in the unitary organs of the working class, to actually make a clear political intervention. If those groups that are not prepared to play the role for which the working class is created with them, then you're no use to the class, you fail the class. And that's the accusation fundamentally held at the SPGB. And when people say that my comrade said that you essentially have a statement with class struggle, in real terms you do, because you don't really have anything to say to the working class. They should wait until the majority have somehow understood questions clearly enough to take over Parliament. That's not a real perspective or a real trajectory for the development of the class struggle and creation of a new class.